Let's get right into it. 1 Corinthians 13, we're doing the love series. Again, this is Word in the House Ministries, and I'm Minister Andrea Carr. And I want to invite you today to discuss love, not being happy with wrongdoing, but rather being happy in truth. So we're talking about relationships, right? We're talking about all kinds of relationships, whether it's your family relationship, friendships, whether it's relationships on your job, associations, business relationships, school relationships, being in ministry, being in foundations, working in the foundations, being on the street. We're talking about relationships as it pertains to love and love in relationships. But, you know, we specifically wanted to look at the relationships between man and woman, whether it's marriage or engagement or you're courting, you're dating, you're just getting to know, or you're about to be in a relationship. We just wanted to focus on that part of it, even though these lessons transcend through all of the relationships that you're in. And so I wanted to share with you this morning because this one was on my heart kind of heavy because I didn't know what direction to go in. I didn't know where God was going to lead me. I didn't know where he was going to guide me. So I spent more time, and I really needed to spend more time with it because he showed me something. And in our relationships, you know, the two become one. When we're courting, courting is a symbol that this is someone I'm taking seriously. This is someone who's in my life. This is someone I may be considering going to the next level with, and that's getting married or where you see yourself with this person. And so we, in the world, when we were in the world, we used to date and date and date and date. And when we became saved, when we became filled with Jesus and the Holy Spirit, one of the things that we were taught was to never date the way the world does. So we're not dating for pleasure. We're not dating for fun. We're not dating just to kick it. We're supposed to be dating, courting, in order to set ourselves up for marriage. That's what we're dating with, a purpose. And our purpose is to be married, to become one. And as we're doing this, as we're learning people and meeting people and seeing people, we are to just figure out, is this someone who I could see myself with? We're not wasting time. And can I be honest with you? The older we get, the less likely you want to be wasting time. Now, that's not everybody. There are some people who want to waste time. There are some people who want to get into a relationship just to get some satisfaction physically, maybe mentally, maybe, you know, emotionally, but then move on to the next. There are some people who are serial daters. We know that. There are some people who never want to settle down. There's some people who shouldn't probably settle down because they have not worked on some things in their past. They have not forgiven things in their past. They're not ready to move on. But then there are others who do want to get married. And I know I was talking to a friend yesterday, and I'm in several relationship groups, and it's interesting to hear the perspective of people. And I think that needs to be shared more and more, what people are actually looking for, because a lot of us dated in the world. So we have that world mentality when it comes to dating in spirituality, when we're trying to walk in Jesus and we're trying to do this the spiritual way. But we don't have any learning. We don't have any training. We don't have any understanding of what the difference is between dating in the world and dating as a saved person, because it should look different. We're not supposed to be the world. We're in the world, not of the world. So it should look different. But if no one ever tells you what the difference is, you'll go on dating just like you did in the 90s, in the early 2000s, or whenever it was before Jesus, before he entered in your life, before you committed to him. You'll continue dating those ways. And so there needs to be more and more talk, conversation, especially with our younger generation, especially with my generation, of what it looks like to date as a saved person. What does it look like? Is it this way or this way? Should we date in a group? Should we go out together, save people, and interact? And then if we see someone that interests us, do we have a chaperone? What does it look like? I'm really asking that question. What does dating look like as a Christian, as opposed to dating looking like when we're in the world? And you listen to different people because people have different ideas. But I think that's something we need to address more and more. So I've been looking at 1 Corinthians 13 and just breaking it down week by week, just to see what it is that God tells me. So this one, love does not delight in evil, but is rather happy with the truth. That one kind of threw me because I'm like, okay, Lord, what exactly, you know, is evil when it comes to love? How are we missing it in love? How in a relationship between man and woman are we evil where love wants to be true? And there's so many different scenarios. We come in broken sometimes. When we get into relationships, there are certain parts of us that may not be healed. There are certain parts of us where we're carrying baggage. Remember the song by Erykah Badu, Bag Lady? And we're carrying this hurt. We're carrying betrayal. We're carrying heartbreak. We're carrying disappointment. We're carrying daddy issues. We're carrying mommy issues. We're carrying our issues. And so we're broken and we get into a relationship with someone who's carrying their baggage and their stuff, their hurt, their pain. And so the two of us who are broken get together trying to become one healed person, and doesn't work like that. I firmly believe that you need to be healed before you get into a relationship. Now, does that mean because we're healed, we're perfect? Absolutely not. What it means is that I've dealt with some of the issues that I've had in life. I've dealt with some of the hurt and pain that I've had, and I have decided that I'm ready. God has said, push the button and said, you're ready to now be with someone. I'm going to take you and bless you and allow you to be with someone who is on that same level, who has dealt with their issues. This is when we walk in God. This is when we walk behind God and not in front of God, where we make our decisions because, you know, homie over there looks good, or she wears that dress and it's fitting nicely, and, you know, our lust is stirred up, but not our love, if you get me. And so when we walk with God, when we walk in Him and we allow ourselves to be healed, when we allow ourselves to totally be transformed in this thing, it should look different. It shouldn't be us dating the same way. Yeah, you'll still have interest in people. Yeah, people will still capture your attention, but your intentions are different. Your motives are different. You're not trying to hook up with Sister Angela because she's got a body that's good to go and you're trying to sleep with her, but rather you're looking at the inside of Angela and seeing, is this woman someone who will be my true helpmeet? Will she meet me where I need help? Will she help me build my kingdom? Will she help me build our empire? Will she be a good mother to my children? Will she take my dreams on and push me to where I need to be? Will she elevate me? Will she help to elevate me? And likewise, Sister Angela's looking at you saying, is this someone who is going to help me with my dreams and my goals and my ideals? Is this man a good father? Will he be good father material? Will he be a good provider? Because we do recognize and realize that God is our provider, that even when we're single and God provides, when we get together and become one, God is still our provider. So that thing, and a friend of mine, we were talking about this yesterday, that you shouldn't look to man to be your provider. See, society says that man is a provider. God said He is the provider. So when we get this thing the right way, we should come together and be able to become one and do things the godly way instead of the worldly way. And that's something that we need to see and to focus on, because so many of us want a Captain Save-A, you know the last word. We want someone to come in our lives and to rescue us from our bills, rescue us from being single, rescue us from being single parents, rescue us. And the serious problem is that God is the rescuer. He is your source and He provides resources. But we keep looking to men to be these people to save and pull us out. And that's not what God intended. We look for these women to please and pleasure, but that really wasn't what God intended. And so it comes a point where we need to recognize, what does God want with marriage? What is it when the two become one? What is it? And so that's why 1 Corinthians 13 is so powerful, because God is saying, stop pimping love. Stop making it all about what you want and what you desire and what you think you need. And love is truly about me. I am love. So being that I am love, I need you to walk right. I need you to walk righteously. I need you to walk within me to get this thing. Marriage is the two becoming one. But a threefold cord is not easily broken. And who's that third piece in the two? It's God. He cements these marriages. And we know that the devil, the enemy, is against union. He's against marriage. He's against that, because in marriage, us becoming one and being on one accord, how much better can we build the kingdom? And that's what marriage is really about. It's not about our selfish desires. It's not about me flaunting my ring on Facebook. It's not about me having the biggest wedding reception and the biggest party and being bridezilla. That's not what it's about. It's about us ultimately coming together so we're stronger, because I'm his helpmeet, he's my helpmeet, and we build the kingdom of God, and we show other people how to build the kingdom of God, and our lives become testimonies, and others say, well, what do I need to do? How can I get on board? How can I do this? And we continue building, and we continue to multiply and bring favor to the earth and work this land so that it could be righteous. So we need to understand that. And so 1 Corinthians 13 gives us a picture of what love really is. And when you look at it, love is a sacrifice. It's not easy. That's why there's so many pieces. And that's why God had me go through this series, because there are so many pieces to love. There are the what love isn't, and there are the what love looks like. And so we're breaking it down week by week to see what it is that God is truly saying. And he's saying that if you truly have love, and not just in a relationship, a romantic relationship, a marriage, a courtship, but if you really have love for your brother, if you really have love for a neighbor, if you really have love for your coworker, if you really have love for your supervisor and your pastor and your ministry leader and your mentor, this is what it looks like. And it's not easy, because it makes us go outside of our comfort zone. It makes us put ourselves on Front Street. It really does. Love makes you open to being vulnerable. It makes you open to being rejected. It makes you be open to being talked about. It makes you open to people walking away from you. See, this is what love is. And a lot of us don't like to talk about it because we want to protect our hearts. We want love if love is comfortable. We want love if love is safe. We want love if love is going to do everything we want, but we don't have to work for it. Can I be honest with you? Love is work. Love is work every single day. You can't say, okay, let's work on love last week and do nothing for it this week. Every day you have to work on love. There are some days your partner is going to be unlovable. They're going to be moody. They're going to have a bad day. But love says love them in spite of. There are going to be days that you're angry. There are going to be days that you have harsh words. Unfortunately, I wish I could tell you that, you know, once you were a believer and you got married, it became easy, but that's a lie. But you have to work on it. You have to say, okay, we're angry. Give us a few minutes to shake it off, but let's come back to the table and talk about it, because we're not going to let the enemy allow us to allow it to fester. We're not going to walk in unforgiveness. We're going to talk to each other so that we can get on the same page and forgive one another so we can continue forward. There are going to be days love is ugly and it hurts, but it's so worth it to keep going and keep pushing. The problem is we get involved in relationships because of lust. It has nothing to do with love. It's because I lust your body. It's because I lust your finances. It's because I lust your title. It's because I lust where you're going in life. It's because I lust because other people lust for you. So I walk into lust instead of walking into love. And as soon as things go wrong, as soon as you gain a few pounds, or as soon as you look a certain way, or as soon as that money is gone, or as soon as you lose your job, or as soon as you walk away from your calling, as soon as something happens, I walk away. And I'm not walking away because I've fallen out of love with you. The problem is I never loved you. I lusted you. And so it's easy for me when I lust you to walk away. Who knows that love stays? True love really stays. Like, there's someone you can love 10 years ago and still have love for 10 years later. And so when you're in a marriage, it doesn't cancel that out, because love changes. There are some days that you're high in love and there are some days that you're low in love, but the love still remains when it's love. So this is when you have to work it and build it and have conversations. And sometimes you need to go talk to a counselor. Sometimes you need to go talk to your pastor or your mentor and say, I need help. Because right now, I'm not feeling the love like I used to. There are times when the two of you have to be really honest and open up conversation with each other and say, this is what's happening. And you have to listen actively and attentively, and you have to speak honestly and tactfully from your heart and get together and get to a place where you're building again when you're falling. I promise you, it's not easy. But when it's love, it's worthwhile. There's no guarantee. Now, I will tell you this, that love will last forever with a person, you know, especially when it's wrong way, when it's a wrong intention, when it's a wrong motive. But with God and time, there are things that can be healed that you thought would never, ever be able to be healed. And that's why it's important to look at scriptures like 1 Corinthians 13, because there's some things that you may have to work on in yourself. There's some things that you may have to get yourself right about. Or there's some things that you might have to look at your spouse and or your mate and say, you know, I need to give them a little latitude. I need to give them a little rope, because I do understand that they're in a place right now. And let me pray for them. That's why praying together is so important. That's why praying separately is so important. Praying and covering your relationship is important, even before you walk into it. It's important so that way you line up with God. And He is the one that cements your relationship. So today, love does not delight in evil, but is happy with the truth. I was like, God, where are we going with this one? Because this is one that I didn't understand. Now, there are a lot that we talked about. Love being patient and kind, not holding fault, not being angry. Now, those I understood. But this one, I was like, I don't really understand too well. And this is why I had to take time with Him this morning, because I had to sit and hear His heart about this one. And you know what He gave me this morning as our scripture? He gave me Genesis. He gave me the story of Joseph. And when He gave it to me, it blew my mind, because He took me somewhere that we don't like to mention and talk about. And sometimes people are in denial about it. But He told me the story of Joseph backwards. He started with the promises that came to Joseph, how he became king, how he became second in charge over all the land. And he was only second to Pharaoh. He started from there. He started from the promise being fulfilled. God took me to the fulfilling of Joseph's destiny and how he rescued his family and a nation. But then He took me backwards, because love does not delight in evil. And I said, well, God, to be honest with you, I didn't see any evil in Joseph. And if anything, I saw the opposite. Like, Joseph really sacrificed. Joseph was put into things. Joseph was hated on and lied on and denied. And he was accused and imprisoned and lost jobs and lost time and was hated. And really, he went through it. So love does not delight in evil. I don't understand it. And God began to show me that Joseph was delighted in truth. Love delights in truth. And Joseph was the truth that God delighted in, because he was hated and accused and imprisoned because some evil took place. And the thing we don't like to talk about are the generational curses. That there are things, yeah, we do our own dirt. Yeah, the enemy causes some things in our lives. But to be very honest with you, we accuse the enemy a lot when the enemy doesn't even show up sometimes. But there are some things we walk in, some things we walk through because of what happened with mom and dad, what happened with big mama and big papa, and what happened with great, great, great. See, there's some things that are on us that we didn't cause. There's some things that are taken out on us because of people in our lives that we had nothing to do with. We're just a byproduct of DNA. We are a byproduct of genealogy and the generations before us. And God showed me love does not delight in evil. Well, Joseph was going through some things because he had a father and mother, and Joseph had a grandfather and a grandmother. And so love not delighting in evil, but delighting in truth. See, Joseph walked in uprightness. Was he perfect? No, because there was only one perfect person, and that was Jesus. But Joseph did a lot of things right. And so he walks out how love delights in truth. But I wanted to take you back to see something like God showed me. See, Joseph was the 11th son of Jacob. And Jacob loved Joseph. Jacob loved Joseph. Joseph was his favorite son. See, Benjamin was the 12th, but let me not go there right now. I want to focus on Joseph. And what happened was, because Jacob loved Joseph so much, his brothers became jealous of Joseph. So they plotted against Joseph. They planned against Joseph. They plotted to get him sold, because see, first they wanted to kill him. Let's be honest, because Joseph had a dream, and in Joseph's dream, the brothers bowed down to him and he told them about the dream. And then he had another dream where not only the brothers bowed down to him, but his parents bowed down to him. And so there was some hatred, there was some jealousy, but Jacob understood that his son was a special son, but he also loved him so much that he gave him this coat of many colors, and he hadn't given the other 10 anything like this. And so their hatred for Joseph grew. But can I take it back a little bit? Because why did Jacob love Joseph so much? What was it about Joseph that Jacob loved so much that he would risk the hatred and anger of his other 10? Well, see, you got to go back in history, because Jacob was so in love with Joseph's mother, Rachel. See, Jacob loved Rachel, though he was married also to her sister, Leah. See, there were two sisters, and the two sisters didn't get along. See, Leah held over Rachel's head that she was able to have children. And at this time, Rachel was barren. She was not able to have the children of the husband who loved her so much, but Leah was able to have them. And she would hold it over Rachel's head, and Rachel would feel some type of way, because here's the man that I love that loves me more than my sister, but I'm not able to conceive for him. And I don't know who I'm talking to, but you know that feeling when you want to give this person so much, but you're unable to. So you start feeling a type of way because you can't produce for them what they're looking for. So you start questioning yourself, and you start getting a little mad at God. Can we be real about it? When we really want to do something and we're unable to, and we get a little angry at God because we're like, okay, Lord, you put me in this place, in this position, and I just want to be able to be fruitful, but I can't. I don't see the fruit of it right now. So you get a little angry and you start questioning who you are. And so Rachel gets into this place and she's like, I can't give birth. So she has this plan that, oh, well, I have a handmaid. So if I get my handmaid to sleep with my husband, then at least he'll be able to get a son through that means. And so this happens. But then Leah's like, oh, but I can give him a son. And for a season, Leah's not able to. So then she gives her handmaid to Jacob, and then they have sons. And then Leah begins having more children again, and Rachel is still barren. And she begins to pray and Lord, what's going on? Why can't I have children? Well, eventually God opens up Rachel's womb and she's able to conceive, and she has this son. And think of it from Jacob's standpoint, the one I love the most is having my son. And so now, not only is his affection for Rachel, but it's also for this son named Joseph. The one that I love the most is having my son. So now he shows more favor towards Joseph. So now you understand that there's some animosity in the family. And it's not because they're different mothers. Because here's the thing. The sons, the 10 before Joseph, have different mothers. There's already, before Rachel gives birth to Joseph, 3 baby mamas. Well, there's one wife and 2 baby mamas, right? But the sons, the 10, are knit. They're tight. They're close. They don't say, you're not my brother because we got different mothers. They don't say, hey, you're my stepbrother or my half-brother. They don't say any of that. They don't do any of that. They're real close. But this Joseph one, when the fourth mother gets involved, now they're a little salty. Now they're a little testy because now we don't like you. Let's call you out as our half-brother. Mind you, they didn't say that about any of the others. But this one, and it's because of the jealousy they hold because of the favor that Jacob shows to Joseph. So I'm saying to someone today that you have to be careful of how you treat your children. You have to be careful of having favorites and showing favoritism because you will cause animosity where there wouldn't be any. You'll cause separation where there would not be any because you have gotten to a place where you're putting this one or these two on a pedestal and you have others watching. So be mindful that you don't show favoritism. One thing that we believe in my family is if I do for one, I do for all. And that's not just our children, but if we have our nieces and nephews around, if we have children around, they all get loved on and get treated. If I can't treat all, then I can't treat any. And that's something that should be more prevalent because a lot of times there's hatred between siblings, not because of anything the siblings did to each other, but a sibling will feel that they don't belong or they don't feel that they're as loved as another sibling because of the way you treat them. So just be mindful of how you treat your babies. Be mindful of spending equal time with all your children. Be mindful of having one-on-one dates with your children. Be mindful of giving to all or giving to none. Now, birthdays are different. We understand that. But there are days where you might be out and about and there's an ice cream store and you want to get your child an ice cream cone, but you don't give to another. Be mindful of that. And I've had to tell myself that, too, because I have two daughters and a son, and my son doesn't hang out with us because we do a lot of girly things, but I have made it my business to make sure I go and play basketball with him. I make sure I play video games with him. I make sure that he gets my time and attention, and then there are times that we're out and about, and if I remember, I get him something even though he's not there. So when I'm out, I make sure he gets something. Now, I would like to tell you I do it 10 out of 10 times, maybe 8 out of 10, because then I'm like, oh, man, I forgot to get. So then I put in my mind, I need to go do something for him or give him something extra because they got. So I'm talking to parents this morning. Be mindful of favoritism. It's a deadly thing. There are people who have died because of favoritism. Joseph almost did. They put him in a pit because they wanted to kill him. But his oldest brother was like, hey, there's some, I'm going to come back and get him because that was his plan. He was going to release him. But so happens that some slave traders came. And because the slave traders came, the brothers were like, hey, we can get some money for him. Instead of killing him, let's go sell him. But I'm digressing because that's not what I want you to look at right now. So Jacob had a favorite. Her name was Rachel. And Rachel's son was his favorite. And he showed favoritism. So now we have the animosity of the brothers. But let's go back a little bit more because why is there a favorite? Why is Rachel a favorite instead of being an only? Why is there a competition between two sisters? Well, here's the thing. Jacob was tricked into marriage with Leah. Jacob is known as a trickster. But Jacob got tricked by his father-in-law. See, he wanted to marry Rachel. Laban, his father-in-law, said, you know, your family and you're here helping me and you're serving and you're working, but I don't want you to work for me and me not give you wages. So what is it that I can do for you so that you would work for me? What is the payment that you want? And Jacob said, I want your youngest daughter, Rachel. Rachel was beautiful and had a fine figure. She was a bad mamma jamma, as they used to say back in the day. But Laban agreed to it, right? Right. He agreed to it. He said, okay. Jacob said, I'll work for you for 7 years. This wasn't Laban. Laban didn't say work for my daughter for 7 years. Jacob said, I shall work for you 7 years. And after that 7 years, give me Rachel. Laban was like, sure, good, wonderful. Well, the 7 years came to pass. And Jacob was like, Jacob was like, it's time for my payment. I'm ready to marry your daughter. And so Laban was like, good, let me have this big wedding feast and I'll give you, I'll present Rachel to you. So Laban, instead of giving Jacob Rachel, put Leah in the tent. Well, we know there was no electricity back then, right? We also know it's a wedding feast. So we're going to put in our mind that there was drinking and music and merriment going on. So when Jacob got to the tent, he might have been two shades to the wind, and there's a woman there. And he's assuming that the woman is his wife, is Rachel. This is we done had the feast, and I said I wanted Rachel, and Rachel is who I want to be with. So Laban promised me her. He's not going to, you know, flake on his word. He's going to say and do what he said he's going to do. Well, he lays with Leah, and the morning comes. And when the morning comes, he sees that it's not Rachel who he wanted, but it's Leah. And see, Leah was not pleasing to the eye. She wasn't the beautiful one. It said that her eyes were crossed. She was not gentle to the eye. So imagine Jacob, who is in love with Rachel because he sacrificed 7 years of his life for her. And the Bible does say he loved her that much that he sacrificed, right? And he wakes up to her sister. Now, I'm going to leave it there, Holy Spirit. Thank you, Holy Spirit. I was going to say something, but I'm going to leave it right where it is. So now he goes back to Laban and he's like, you promised me Rachel, but you gave me Leah. This is not who I want. Yeah, you know, we did what we did, but no. And so Laban was like, okay, you're right. I tricked you. I apologize. Work for me another 7 years and I will give you Rachel. So this is how the animosity happened. This is why there are two sisters involved in a story, because the father tricked the spouse. See, Jacob is known as a trickster, but here he is getting tricked. And so now there's animosity between the sisters because honestly and truly, Jacob loved Rachel. The Bible never talked about Jacob loving Leah. It talked about, you know, him laying with her, making her his wife. It talked about them having children together, but Rachel, he and Rachel talked. He and Rachel did. He and Rachel, you never heard he and Leah. So their animosity between the sons began with animosity between the sisters, because imagine you marrying somebody and them not loving you. Imagine you loving someone and them not being pleased with you. It's not too far-fetched because it happens almost every day. We don't always marry for love, even though we should. Sometimes we marry for a position. You know, he's a pastor. I want to be a first lady. That's my life's goal. Or we get married because he's a CEO. He owns a business. Or we get married because he has 7 income figure. Or we get married because he has a mansion or a nice house. Or his portfolio looks great and he drives this. Or he wears that. Or he looks like this. He's 6 foot and looking like, you know. Or we marry her because, you know, them hips and stuff. Or we marry her because she looks a certain way, because she has a certain degree or a certain pedigree. And so we don't love always when we say I do. So imagine being with someone that you don't love. You don't think they can feel that you don't love them. And they try to do everything, because unfortunately what I've seen is that you'll have one person who does love that person. Both of them are not out of love. And one person loves this person and they're trying to do everything to get this person to love them. They give of themselves. They sacrifice themselves. They open up trying to get this love from this person. But yet all they feel is rejection. How does that feel? That translates not only to the two of you, but if you have children, your children can feel that. They can see they don't love each other. Or she doesn't love him, or he doesn't love her. And that definitely affects the self-esteem of a child. That affects the day-to-day comfort of a child. That affects the relationship and the family. The family feels it too. We feel the love that's not there, just like we feel the love that is there. And so Leah is second class. So because she's a second class citizen, she's holding over her sister's head, I can have kids and you can't. And so that's her sense of empowerment. That's her sense. You don't think she's feeding this to her children? She's not feeding this to her boys? Hey, I can have kids. She can't. You're better than. But then Rachel has a son, and Jacob's not paying them any attention, but he's paying Joseph attention. And here it is. Now we have this animosity. Love does not delight in evil, the trickery. But Andrea, you keep talking about Jacob and how he's a trickster. Well, let's go back a little bit, because Jacob is a twin. It's not just a Jacob. His father is Isaac. And Isaac fell in love with Rebecca at the well. Remember that? And so Isaac has children with Rebecca, and they're twins, Esau and Jacob. Esau was the hairy baby, the ruddy baby, the one that was out in the field and the hunter, a skilled hunter, the Bible says, and he was out and about and tan and robust. And then we have Jacob, who stayed in the tent. So he wasn't hairy. He was clean shaven. Esau was the firstborn twin. So because he was the firstborn twin, the birthright of the father and the blessing of the father belonged to him as Isaac's firstborn. Jacob, even though he came out with Esau, the Bible says he was holding on to his heel. So they came out, but still Esau came first. Well, Jacob being second born, that meant that the birthright didn't belong to you. The blessing didn't belong to you. So it's kind of like, think about how it is in England, where you have a firstborn child born to a king. That firstborn child, his destiny is to become king. And even if the king has 12 other children, and maybe there's three of them that have the gifting of the king that can walk out well in the kingdom, it doesn't matter. Because that firstborn child has the birthright to be king. He is in direct line to replace the king should the king pass away. And so this is how it is right now in the Jewish tradition and custom. The firstborn is the one that gets the birthright to be the firstborn and all the blessings of the father. So Jacob doesn't get it. He won't receive it. It goes directly to Esau. Well, one day, Esau is out hunting and he's out in the field and he's hungry. He's famished. He's so hungry. Jacob is in the house cooking, making this stew. Esau comes into the house and he's like, I'm hungry. Feed me. Let me have some of that. Well, Jacob, being the trickster that he is, says, well, give me your birthright. Give me your birthright and I'll give you some stew. So I'll have your birthright. I'll have your seal. I'll have the name of dad. And so Esau, being so hungry, gives away his birthright. And I wasn't there. You weren't there. The Bible doesn't say, but I kind of get the picture that Esau's like, of course I'll give away my birthright. That's just a name, because dad is still going to bless me. I'm still going to get the blessing of my father. And that's all the land and all the open doors. And it's like a blank check written to me, and all of this, all the inheritance belongs to me. So go ahead. I'll give away my name. That's fine. That's the birthright. Okay, fine. I'll give that. But I'm going to be blessed by my father and walk into everything that my dad owns and has. And so later on, a curious thing happens. These two twins that look nothing alike, smell nothing alike, sound nothing alike, find themselves in a situation where Isaac becomes old and weak. He is ready to give his blessing to his son. And so as he's ready to give his blessing, he calls Esau to him and he says, go out into the field and catch some animals and make the stew the way that I like it. And when you bring it back to me, I'm going to bless you. And so Esau goes out. But here's the thing. There's someone listening to this conversation. Rebecca's listening to the conversation and she calls Jacob to her and she tells Jacob, your father's about to bless Esau, but here's what I want you to do. I want you to go out and catch me two goats. And when you catch the two goats, I want you to bring them back to me and I'm going to fix the stew the way that your father likes it. So we see here that the trickster has some help. See, the trickery doesn't just begin in Jacob. It's in his mother. Because now his mother, okay, let me paint a bigger picture for you. Jacob is Rebekah's favorite. Esau is Isaac's favorite. Esau and Isaac are of the same mind. He's a hunter. He's out in the field. He's that rough, my boy. Jacob is sensitive and gentle and mild-mannered. Well, you know, he's in the house and he doesn't go out. He'd rather be up learning. He's the learned one, as they would say. And so Rebekah favors Jacob. Well, Jacob brings back the goat and she, you know, kills them. They take the skin off. She makes the stew. But Jacob is like, Mom, I can't make this happen because I don't look anything like my brother. And he's hairy. And Dad's going to know that it's me. And Rachel is like, Rebekah. I love to get Rebekah and Rachel mixed up. Rebekah is like, don't worry about it. I'll help you with this. So Rebekah goes and gets Esau's finest outfit and puts it on Jacob. And then she takes the skin, the hair off of the goat and puts it on Jacob's hands and around his neck and all the areas. And then she gives Jacob the stew to give to his father. So now remember, his eyesight is going. He's old and weak, so he can't see and hear as well. But when Jacob speaks, he's like, are you really my son? And Jacob was like, yes, I'm really Esau. This is me. So he goes up to his father and gives the stew. Well, the stew is exactly the way that he likes it, because Esau would know that, how he likes it. But then Rebekah would too, because that's his wife. And so he goes and he touches Jacob and he feels the hairiness. And he knows Jacob is not a hairy person. And then he smells Jacob. And he smells like Esau. So he's like, well, let me give you the blessing. And here's the thing. He blesses Jacob. And a father can only bless one child one time. That's it. And so he gives Jacob the blessing that Esau is supposed to have. Jacob leaves out. And as soon as he leaves out, Esau comes back. And Esau's like, I'm ready for the blessing. And Isaac is like, I've already given it to you. Esau said, no, I'm just getting back. You didn't give it to me. And so they figure it out that Jacob has tricked him. And now Esau gets angry and he's like, I'm going to kill my brother. Well, word that as soon as Isaac dies, Esau is going to kill Jacob gets to Rebekah. So Rebekah calls Jacob to her and says, hey, come here, son. I need you to run away. You need to go away because Esau is angry with you. He's going to plot to kill you. You need to leave. So Jacob leaves, which is how he gets to be with Laban. See, I'm going backward the way God made me go backward, because I need you to understand where this all came from. Love does not delight in evil. Well, Andrea, I get it now. I see where the tricks happen. I see where the evil happened. I understand it. But I want to go back one more time, one more again for you, because it didn't just start with the twins. It didn't just happen between Esau and Jacob, because they had a father named Isaac. You remember Isaac, right? And Isaac was the one that was spared his life because there was a ram in the bush. Remember, he's Abraham's son. You know, Isaac is the promise, the fulfillment of what's going to happen in the lineage of Abraham, right? And see, we see a picture of Isaac and he was saved. But there's a thing, because see, Isaac lied. Isaac was a trickster as well, because when they went into the land, he and his wife, Rebekah was so fine, so beautiful. He knew that they would kill him to get to her. And he's lied to the king and said, this is my sister. So in order for him to be saved, he was like, oh, no, you can have her. She's my sister. She's not my wife. And so the king was going to lay with Rebekah. But see, a curious thing happened, because God showed him who she really was. And he said, if you lay with her, you're going to die. And so the king called Isaac and said, why would you lie like this? Why would you set me up like this? And Isaac had to admit, well, I didn't want you to kill me to get to her, because I saw your eyes on her. I saw how fine you thought she was. So I knew you would take her from me. And so that I wouldn't lose my life, I sacrificed her. So I wanted to show you today that even though the story of Joseph begins in Genesis 37 and goes to 50, the story of Joseph really began way back when in Genesis 26, because it started with his grandfather. His grandfather lied and had a son, twins, two sons, that one, the youngest, tricked the oldest, and it continued on to Jacob going to Laban and getting tricked by Laban, and then Joseph happened. See, I wanted to take you back because love does not delight in evil, and even though things happened and they tricked and they lied and they tried to get over, there were some things that fell onto Joseph because of it. See, Isaac's lie begot twins, that begot trickery, that begot tricks and favoritism, right? And that favoritism and the trickery begot more trickery, that begot Jacob getting tricked to marry Leah, who he didn't love, and working hard for another 7 years to get to Rachel, which begot 10 other sons, which begot the 11th son, the favorite son. So I'm trying to show you how evil may not hit just you. I'm trying to show you how your lies and your games may not come and hit you, but they will come out in the wash eventually. So some of the things that we've been walking into have to do with directly with things that our great-grandparents did, or things our grandparents did, or things our parents did, or things our uncle and aunt did. See, we think we got over. We think, hey, I beat it. God didn't get me for this. But do you have a daughter? Do you have a son? Do you have grandchildren? Do you have nieces? Do you have nephews? Do you want it to fall on them? And see, this is why I love the lights and truth, because sometimes in the midst of our mess, in the midst of our trickery, in the midst of our lies, we need to take a moment and say, hey, hold on. This is me. I did this. Lord, I'm sorry. I did this. I need you to forgive me. Don't let it hit my kids. I break this right now. I bind it right now so that my children won't have to suffer for the things that I did. Instead of thinking foolishly, oh, I got away with it. Truth be told, you don't get away with anything. God is merciful. He does have grace. He gives it to you. But that does not mean that there may not be payment later on down the line. It does not mean that in the big crux of things that your children won't suffer for what you did. It doesn't mean that your grandchildren won't suffer for what you did. The sins of a father, the sins of a mother, the sins of a grandfather, the sins of a grandmother, and on and on. So love does not delight in evil. It doesn't. That quick get over that you did, what are the repercussions behind it? Instead of being honest, hey, we're having issues in this relationship. Let's talk about it. Instead of me bringing in a third or fourth person into our relationship that you don't know about. So I'm saying I'm hanging with the boys, but in reality, I'm hanging with my side chick. Instead of telling him he's not pleasing and let's work on this, you have an emotional relationship with your coworker. Or you lying and hiding and saying, no, I don't have it, but in truth you do. Or being evil and bitter towards your partner. See, love is not that way. It delights in the truth. And can I be honest with you? The truth doesn't always feel good. It doesn't. There are some truths that are out there that we're not ready to handle, but in the big picture, in the big scheme of things, it's better to go ahead and deal with those things. So that way you can work on how to fix them, or if they're not able to be repaired, walk away from them and get healed. There's so much hurt that happens because we do this tit for tat thing. You hurt me, so now I'm going to hurt you. You lied to me, so now I'm going to lie to you. I need to. Because you're like, Andrea, it all sounds good. But how does it relate? When I was married, I was in a loveless marriage. I told you that. You know that. and I'm not getting into that part. I just want to share with you just one part. I had a spouse that was unfaithful. My ego was bruised, not my heart, because my heart wasn't invested, but my ego was bruised. So do you know what I did? I didn't cheat. And it's not because I was this good person, because I had a best friend who said to me, when you go to get divorced, because I knew that was going to happen, you don't want the court, the lawyer, the judge to say, you were wrong. You did wrong. You want to be able to walk up into the courtroom blameless and said, I didn't cheat. I didn't do this. I did cook. I did provide. She said, you want to be seen in a good light. And I'm being honest with you today. However, what I used to do, and I'm telling you, was I would go out to Walmart, but I would be dressed in a cute outfit or some heels and perfume, get showered, and I would leave out like I had a date. I would go to Walmart and spend 3 hours up and down the aisle, sitting in the parking lot, reading a book. But I wanted him to think, because you're cheating on me, I'm cheating on you. So how does it feel? And it would be a big blow up when I got back. Trust me when I tell you. But was it worth it? No. No. What should have happened, to be honest with you, was a conversation. I know you're cheating. Are you going to stop? Do we need to get counseling? Can we repair this? Or do we just need to walk away from it instead of playing these games? We say we're grown. We say we're adults. We say we're mature. But then we do childish things because our ego is bruised, because our heart is broken, because of what people might say, because of what people will think. In all honesty, it's not good to do evil for evil. It's going to come back to you. Because me getting back at him, I would have to come to the house. Now we got a big blow up, a big argument, because now he's accusing me of doing this and doing that. And I wasn't doing it. But I wanted to give him the perception that I was doing it. So it's just like doing it. Because the same repercussion is going to happen. When I walk through the door, there's still going to be this knockout, drag out argument. Nobody's getting any sleep because we're going to argue all day and night and blame and blame and blame. Instead of figuring out, hey, we're in a relationship we shouldn't be in. Let's sever and heal, walk away, so there's no more hurt. There's no more accusations. There's no more bitterness. There's no more anger. Let's be real about it. And this is why I say the truth can sometimes hurt, because you can be in a thing and it's not real. You can be in a relationship and it be a fraudulent relationship. You can be in a business relationship and the person that you're in business with is not doing the company any good. They're not doing it right. They don't have the love that you have for it. And it might be time to split. True conversations hurt sometimes, but they're so necessary so you can move forward in healing. Love does not respect evil. It doesn't respect the tricks. It doesn't respect the games. It doesn't respect the nonsense. It doesn't. It doesn't like it. Love is God, right? Do you think God is really happy when we play games just because he allows us to play games? Do you think? Think of yourself as a parent. You know your child is running game on you. Do you like it? No. So why would God our Father? So I'm saying to you today, 1 Corinthians 13, love is about truth. True truth, honest truth, open truth. Now, I always tell you, when you give truth, you've got to be tactful. You've got to be mindful of the way you say things, the tone that you use, and the timing that you do it in. You've got to be mindful. That's why prayer is so important. Father, when should I say this? How should I say this? Give me the words to say. It's so important because you're telling it to someone who you could hurt. You have a person's heart in your hand, literally. Okay, not literally, figuratively, but literally. In their hand. It's in your hand. You have to be careful how you treat this person. Even if you don't want to be with this person, even if it's one-sided, it's still going to affect them. So you have to be careful and cautious how you do it, but you've got to be honest about it. Because what you're doing when you're being dishonest, when you're running all these games, when you think you're tricking them, you're hurting them more. You don't think that she knows that you're cheating, when you got lipstick stains on you, you smell like a woman or you smell like soap, and you were supposed to be at work for 12 hours, you don't think she knows? You don't think he knows that now all of a sudden you're wearing your hair differently, you're rocking this new perfume, you're bouncing around, but when you get home, you act like you don't want to be there? You don't think he knows? You've got to be careful with how you treat people. The Bible wants you to love people the way you love yourself. And is that really how you love me on yourself? By being a trickster? By being a liar? By feeding them poison with your words and your attitudes and how you go about it? You got to do better. And I'm saying this not just for you, but for us all. Those of us who want to be in a relationship, who want to get into a relationship, be mindful of how you get the person. If you're getting the person with lies and tricks, baby, you got to lie and trick to keep them. If you're putting on a false face, a representative, you're going to have to keep on that false face, a representative, to keep them. So trickery is not something you should go after when you're in relationship. You're supposed to be yourself. The problem is a lot of us don't know who we are. Because we've had so many hurts and pains and bruises, we haven't been able to get out of it to see who we are now. Which is why I say we need to take time, heal, find out who you are, find out what it is that you need, and then progress from there. Go on from there. Move forward from there once you're really healed. And only you know when you're really healed. People will tell you, oh, get over it. It's been a year. It's been 5 years. But if you're not over it in 5 years, then you're not over it in 5 years. And you need to continue in the process of healing until you are totally healed, where you feel like you like yourself, you love yourself, you respect yourself, and you know that these are your standards that you're not going to compromise. It's like that. And that's the way it is. No, I'm just kidding. But thank you for tuning in today. This wasn't an easy one for me. God had to take me from truth to trickery. He had to show me that Joseph went through things because of the generations before him, because of his parents, because of his grandparents, because of his great-grandparents. The lies and the tricks that were told came all the way down to him and the animosity between he and his brothers. It didn't happen overnight. It happened because of time and tricks and lies and favoritism. So I'm saying this to you, that you can walk in truth. You can walk in honesty. You can walk in your dreams and your destinies. Just recognize the root of some of your situations. Why is this happening? Why do you feel this way? Why is this like this? There's some roots there that need to be pulled out. And sometimes it's not you. Sometimes you got to go back and look at Big Mama and them. You got to look at Mom and them. You got to look at Daddy. You got to look at the absence of Daddy. You got to look at the absence of Mom. You got to look at what Grandma and Grandpa were doing and say, I break this. I'm not going to be poor. I'm breaking that curse. I'm not going to be a drug dealer. I'm breaking that curse. I'm not going to be a prostitute. I'm breaking that curse. Because there's some things in our ancestors' past that is over us now. And those things need to be broken. They need to be cast off of us. They need to be pulled up by the root so that we can move forward. So there's some things that you have to know about your lineage. There's some things, some truths that you need to hear. And then you need to know, this is the reason why I crave a drink, because alcoholism runs in my family. Or this is why I can't get off the couch, because depression runs in the family line. You got to know these things so that they can be broken off of you and you can move forward. And this is why God had me go from Joseph all the way back up to Isaac, so that I could see the things that Joseph was going through were caused by generations of lies and tricks, deception and favoritism. And so I'm saying it to you, that that's not love. Love walks in truth. It doesn't walk in deception. It doesn't walk in evil. It doesn't walk in wrongdoing. Love wants the best for you. It doesn't want the worst for you. And it doesn't want you to skate by and get away with. It wants you to walk fully into what God has promised you. Why? Because God is love. Thank you for tuning into Word in the House Ministries this morning. I'm Minister Andrea Carr. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Now I'm off to church. I hope you'll be going to church today to get the word poured into you. And I hope that you have a wonderful week. I'll check you out next week. We'll do it same bat time, same bat channel. God bless you. Minister Andrea Carr. Tune in every Sunday at 7 a.m. and Wednesday at 7 p.m. Word in the House Ministry. Minister Andrea Carr. Tune in every Sunday at 7 a.m. and Wednesday at 7 p.m. Word in the House Ministry.